Yes, morning all, Wednesday, April 3, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening, with the teams out for the NRL this week. Gather round coming up in the AFL in South Australia as well. They've got a boxing fight night there, which is on Stan tonight, pay-per-view, called The Gathering, where some ex-AFL players are putting the gloves on against each other as well. News around Zach Lomax at the Dragons. And, well, stacks of other things to talk about today. Dick Fane, though, will be on tomorrow. He's catching a flight. So our US sports segment will be tomorrow. But as you heard in the intro, with Pup dealing with his IT and Wi-Fi, etc., we brought in the big guns this morning. Dean Bulldog Ritchie. How are you, Bulldog?
Yeah, what's good doing? Morning, Middo. Good morning, Loz. Good morning, everybody. Always good to come in here nice and early. Just a little bit of a chill in there in the last week, isn't it? I love it. I hate the summer sun and the humidity.
Yeah, and we're about to go into daylight saving this weekend.
Correct.
Bulldog, so it won't be as dark when we arrive at the studio. But yeah, no, it's starting to get a little bit colder, but the weekend was perfect weather. This weekend, not so.
Got some rain coming, heavy rain.
Very much so, Bulldog. You going to the races?
I am going to the races on
Saturday. Who are you going with?
Just going with some friends, and I just want to ensure it's a good day. But having said that, let's hope the rain bomb stays away.
The rain bomb.
It's going to be a big day, Middo. Four group ones, I think.
So
it'll be an absolute cracking day out there at Royal Randwick.
Belter, and we had the barrier draws for those four group ones yesterday. And another will in the Doncaster, solid at $3.50 with Tab, drew 21, which would be 17 of 20 if those emergencies come out. Riff Rocket in the Derby, gate 10 of 14, also solid at $3.50. Imperatrix, $3 for the TJ, got 6. And Storm Boy, $2.50 for the English size, barrier 8 of 10. But there's a lot to play out in regards to this weather and potential track. Oh, gosh, Sydney, I've seen upwards of 90 mils forecast for Friday. And how many times does this actually eventuate? But, yeah, I mean, the Friday's the day where there's significant rain forecast. I've got the weather at Randwick in front of me, courtesy of the Bureau of Meteorology. So Thursday, 3 to 20 mil. Okay. Friday, 25 to 80. This is for Randwick. Saturday, 0 to 30 mils rain forecast. So, gee, they give themselves a range, don't they, the Bureau?
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that they, you know, will argue they can't be wrong if they give ranges like that.
What do you make of the weatherman's reports, Loz?
I could get a job there.
Right. It could rain, but it might be sunny in the afternoon.
Mate, you just cover your ass. That's all you do. Just cover your ass.
Sounds like your job Monday to Friday.
What's that?
Sounds like your job Monday to Friday.
Throw people under the bus and just keep going.
Gee, you're going to lob some grenades today, I reckon, Bulldog?
Yeah, I think I'll cause a few dramas today with a couple of columns I've written lately. I believe in them. And
you're hitting lately. What's going on?
Stand by them. Oh, they've given me a column to do, Laurie, and that column's about an opinion, and you've got to offer it. You know,
you don't want to be controversial.
Don't set out to be controversial, but you've also got to have your say and you've got to make your opinion strong. Social media's, to me, the devil in the room. I hate it. Oh. And I've copped a bit of a whack on there in recent days, but I haven't looked this morning and I don't think I will look today.
Mm. How many people actually have pictures of themselves and their names that give it to you?
On Twitter, none.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
I just try to say to myself, don't engage. I'm happy to engage with somebody who's got the balls and the guts to put their name to it. But if you want to be gutless and hide behind a name and then expect me to answer, well, you're wasting your time as well as mine.
Anyway, we look forward to that throughout the morning, of course. But the team's out for this week, and a big game to start the round tomorrow night there at Amy Park with the Melbourne Storm coming off a bye. And the Broncos, a really good performance last Friday, 38-12 against their rivals, the North Queensland Cowboys. But big ins for the Storm. Munster, Hughes, Kristen Welsh will come back as well. And the Bronx, they're handing a debut to Ben Takura, who stands 205 centimetres, believed to be the tallest player in the game's history. But having Munster and Hughes back in the halves, just so big for the Melbourne Storm loss.
Well, if they're going to have final success, they'll need those two in the team. There's still no Nelson Asofa Solomona. He's apparently on the nose down there in Melbourne. Come back in not great shape in the off-season, and the Storm haven't been happy with him. So he'll play reserve grade once again. But to get a couple of key players back at this time of the year, pretty crucial to the Melbourne Storm, because I think they've done a reasonable job to start the season, in particular without Cameron Munster. They just got beaten by Newcastle in Newcastle a couple of weeks ago. Then they've had the bye. They've freshened up. They take on the Broncos, but the Broncos are decimated at the moment. But I like the way they played their footy the other night against the Cowboys in horrible conditions. But Adam Reynolds' kicking game was first class, and it just goes to show you, while there's been some critics of Adam Reynolds over the last couple of years, and he just continues to have games where you go, he can go on for another year or two. And I don't know why we're quick to write off old, inexperienced halfbacks after they have a poor game. Everyone expects them to have 10 out of 10s every week, but an experienced halfback are hard to get. You look at 7 or 8 teams in the comp, what they would give to have Adam Reynolds.
Bulldogs. Well, South are still struggling, aren't they, to replace Adam Reynolds to this very day. And it's been, what, two and a half years?
They didn't get a run at the Tigers. You get a run at the Dolphins. You get a run at the Titans. He'd get a run at a lot of clubs. He'd get a run at the Dragons. He'd get a run at Newcastle. I just don't know why we all of a sudden, these older, experienced halves, when they don't play as well as they should, or they're out with a niggle or two, everyone tends to get on their back and say, Bronco's waste of money. No, he hasn't been a waste of money.
We took him to a grand final last year and was probably within a minute of winning the grand final. This Ben Takura, the tallest man allegedly in rugby league. I'll throw out two more lads from the past. Remember Paul Hoff?
Yeah.
Yep.
He was a giant. And there was a fullback for Parramatta in the 70s called Phil Mann. They called him the Spider. He was absolutely as lanky as can be. But there's two other really tall players. We'll see how this bloke goes.
Paul Hoff played...
played for Australia,
didn't he? Yeah, it might have been 91. He had an outstanding season. He was unbelievable. I remember I had to try and make a tackle on him in an Origin game once. And it might have been Origin or a Broncos game. I just didn't get near him. I showed him a bit of space on the side, and he just took it and just ran straight past me. And I thought, wow, this bloke, just long stride. But he was quite tall. How tall was he?
Well, Phil Mann was 2 metres and 1 centimetre.
Yeah, this guy's
2.05, isn't he? Yeah, so that'd be interesting to see how he goes. It's not often we get a really tall forward in our game who's, well over 6 foot. So it'd be interesting to see what he's built like and what his mobility's like.
Anything from Dez at all there at the Gold Coast Titans Bulldogs? I was just thinking yesterday, imagine if the Titans were in Sydney at the moment. They would be absolutely getting hammered because they have been just abysmal to start the season. Clearly the worst team in the league.
Yeah, I spoke to Dez briefly yesterday. We normally have a bit of a G up on the phone, but the G ups have dried up just a fraction at the moment. I don't think he's in a real chirpy mood. He knows he's struggling. Clearly it's for all to see. Yeah, I spoke to him before the game last week. He just wanted to win, as ugly as it was, just to get the monkey off the back. But they can't do it at the moment. I hate to say it, but you look at the draw and I just don't know how far into the season we're going to go before the Titans get that first win.
I never expected them to be this bad. Them to be this bad because I was umming and ahhing about possibility of making the eight.
Me too.
They can't score points.
You look at their halves, they're struggling there. Their forwards, obviously, no Tino, he's gone for the year. It could not have imploded quicker in 2 or 3 weeks, given all the expectations we had up there and all the high hopes Titans fans had. And, that round two game, I think it was, Mitter, 32-0 against the Bulldogs, that was appalling.
They've scored 18 points in 3 games.
But they've leaked a lot too, haven't they?
Yeah, 28, 32 and 30, they've conceded. And yet Cowboys, Raiders away. They've got Manly at home, Warriors away, and then Storm at home. Cowboys at home, Knights at home. Well, that's magic round.
They might win three or four of those games. They might, but they'll win a game, you'd think.
Well, you look at the side that we thought would run last, or many did, the Tigers, and clearly they're playing for their coach, and they've won two games. So you'd have to think in the revised betting market, Middo, and you would no doubt have mentioned this
whatever
in previous
he's doing
days.
Whatever he's doing coaching-wise, Benji's working. And I think that's probably what other coaches will start to look at now, what Benji's doing as a coach. What do you think?
You having a pot at me?
What? No, I'm just saying.
Well, I did find it interesting.
The Tigers are one of the successful teams, and the coach,
and that's what
the
I
coach
said.
Is playing golf on the morning of the game. I don't know too many coaches that do that, but it just seems like it's working.
But
I
isn't that
is
an unusual approach?
Yeah. This is the future of coaching.
And that's exactly what I wrote. Yeah. It would be an unusual approach that he takes.
I was a supporter of yours, Bulldog. You were just posing the question.
I appreciate it. But even playing golf on game day, that is unusual. How many coaches would do that?
I don't know, Dean, but it's the way to go.
I'm saying if it works for Benji, go for it. Do you think many coaches would play golf game day?
I don't know. I've never asked. But I think whatever he's doing is working. 100%. Well done to Benji. Terrific young bloke.
I think you're being facetious over
I'm
here.
I'm not being facetious.
You are.
I'm just saying.
Certainly.
It's just
your attitude.
It's working.
I agree. And you know what? People are still having pot shots at me on social, and I'm not going to respond because it makes me look as though I'm trying to defend myself against Benji. And I said clearly at the time, it may well be the way that Benji gets his best.
Well, you don't have to get angry, Dean. You don't have to get angry. Get your point across.
I get my back up over people like you. You pot from the sidelines.
No, I'm just giving you my opinion.
Okay, all jokes aside, be honest. Coaching and playing golf on the same day. Mm. It's working for Benji.
Yep.
But how many other coaches would do that? No one, let's be honest. No coach would give up 4.5 hours on game day to play golf. But if it works for Benji and it keeps him calm, go for it.
It's probably the only time they get to play.
Probably.
All the work's done.
True. Yeah.
So they can't do anything game day. So it's a good timing.
Would a coach not feel a little strange inside playing, though, thinking, I bet you my opponent isn't on the golf course? Or do you just think, you know what,
no,
I don't care about those things.
No.
I've got to do what works for me.
Well, a lot of them may spend time with family. Some might go for a surf. Some might go for a run. So what's the difference?
I mean, the job's done on game day, isn't it?
Game day,
you're not giving
instructions. You can't do anything in the morning before the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you might be able to, when you get to the game, you know, you're addressed to the players before and after and during the game, you might be able to make some type of difference, but the prep's been done. Mm.
Did you hear the crowd at CommBank on Monday with in regards to Tigers fans? It was deafening. I'm thinking, this is a Parramatta home game.
Yeah, across the TV screen.
It just shows you, Middo, doesn't it, that the game wants the Tigers to be strong. And if they are strong, they've got such a great supporter base and they're loud and they're... And they're vocal and they've got history and I think it's great that they've won two games in a row, albeit I'm sure people will doubt my authenticity in that comment.
Lomaxed out. Cashed up Dragons lose patience with Star. That's back page of the Daily Telegraph, back page of the Sydney Morning Herald as well. Lomax to meet Eels as Dragons grant Star early contract release. Is the headline there. So the club yesterday confirming it had reached agreement with Zach Lomax for him to leave at the end of the season. So he's a free agent. He can talk to other clubs now about 2025 and beyond. And it was again reiterated he could only leave this year if Shane Flanagan is comfortable with a player swap offer. So it turns to now where he ends up. And the Herald saying he will meet with Parramatta today. And how do the Dragons spend the cash? As well, if Lomax or when Lomax leaves, whether it be less likely during this season, you would think, Bulldog, and from 2025 and beyond, and whether he's doing himself out of cash himself as well, because he's reportedly on around 800 a year at the moment. Can he get that elsewhere?
Well, Parramatta, is obviously one of his suitors, as I understand, the Roosters in Melbourne are just gently looking into the situation. I'm a bit disappointed, to be honest with you, gents. I mean, since when do players now tell the coach where they're going to play and if they don't get their way, they go, I'm walking out? Is it the new age player that we look at? I mean, in the old days, the coach told the player where to play. The player didn't tell the coach. He's done a good job this year, Zach Lomax. He's played brilliantly on the wing. He's racked up some great numbers. And yet, because he doesn't get the position that he wants to play, rather than digging in and fighting, he's just said, I'm out. I just don't like it, personally, that a player doesn't get his own way and throws his toys out of the cot.
Do we know that's the reason?
Well, it's been the reason that's been suggested now for, what, 6 weeks to 2 months.
But I think this rumour's been going around for a little bit longer than that.
About Lomax wanting out of the club? It may well be, Laurie, but I'm basing it on what I keep hearing is that it's to do with the position. Perhaps there's some more underlying factors there. I don't know, but I'm also a bit surprised Flano let him go because Flano showed last year with Ben Hunt that if he wants to keep a player who's an elite player, he's going to. And he just said to Ben Hunt, you're not going anywhere. But when it's come to Lomax, he's allowed him to go.
And on that, I see Billy Slater on Wild World of Sports has, you know, accused the Dragons of double standards, considering the situation with Ben Hunt as well.
Yeah, but sometimes I think you learn from your mistakes as well. I'm not saying it was a mistake to let Ben Hunt go, but the noise that surrounded Ben Hunt, will he or won't he, affected the Dragons season. Because every week, it was just in the media. And I reckon by bringing this to a head, and him not agitating for a lease, and that's the story every week when the Dragons go to a press conference, that's knocked on the head now. Everyone knows that Zach Lomax will not be at the Dragons, and everyone knows that they've freed up some salary cap space. And the other thing it does is give the Dragons some opportunity now to sit back and have a look and not be left in the lurch if it was to happen later in the year when he left. They get an opportunity now to sit back and assess and identify weaknesses in their squad, target the right player.
It can't be the coach, Laurie. If you are suggesting that Lomax's dissatisfaction's gone back a couple of months, because Shane Flanagan's only really been in the job for, what, 3 months, 4 months. So it can't be the coach either. So you know, what is it? Is it his position? It can't be his money. It can't be the coach. Is the time Zach Lomax actually came out and said, why I want to leave? Clear the air a bit.
Yeah,
and it's all right to have money. I get that. But you're letting an elite player go. You can't always get an elite player to come in. They're hard to find.
No, you can't. But there'll be some players on the market that you can try and build your roster from. And, you know, you might be able to get someone from another club and turn them in. If you've got a good system in place, and Penrith's a classic example, Melbourne are a good example. They pick the right player, they put him into their system, and they go 10 times better than what they've been anywhere else.
If you look at that Dragons roster,
and
you've got a better football brain than I have, where do you think's an area that they could target with the money they've now got sitting there in the salary cap?
This is the other thing they'll have to be. I don't know what they've got underneath. But one thing you'd be looking at is trying to identify a replacement for Ben Hunt for when he leaves. Because without him, if he got injured, I don't know where they're going. So I don't know whether there's someone out there that they have identified as a potential replacement for Ben Hunt. Try and get him into the system. Because Ben Hunt will go in the next year or two, won't he? You'll have 1 or 2 years, and you're better off to plan now for halfbacks, but obviously forwards. You know, they need some strength in the middle. And I saw Big Nelson mentioned last night on NRL 360 by the panel. They were talking about Big Nelson and Sofa Solomona possibly going to the Dragons. Is he the right fit for the Dragons? I know there'll be a lot of clubs lining up for him, but he's on big money down there in Melbourne. And the fact that he hasn't met the standards at the Storm, would that sway clubs away from him? Because Melbourne have this reputation of getting the best out in players, and if players don't buy in, they buy themselves out, if you know what I mean. And they've set a standard, and they won't drop that standard for anyone. But you'd certainly look at strengthening the middle. But when you've got an experienced halfback like Ben Hunt, I reckon 2 or 3 years from the end, you've got to try and identify the person to replace them.
The Dragons are insistent he will play out this season. But you can't help but think if a deal can be struck between Lomax and a new club in the next week or two, 4:25, that there might not be some agitation for him to go immediately.
So this is what I wouldn't like if I was a fan, to see Zach Lomax play three clubs in the space of 6 months.
hate that.
Like play for the Dragons, go and play a short-term deal with, just say the Warriors, for instance, and then sign for Parramatta the year after. I'd be just sitting there going, mate, I don't get that. I don't. And I'm unsure of whether the long-term club that signs Zach would be happy for him to go and play with that other club as well. I think they'd prefer him to stay at the Dragons and play. I don't know.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Now, there's Premier League, midweek Premier League on this morning. Stacks of games. Big one coming up, not far from kicking off. In fact, in about 5 minutes' time, Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham have a very big London derby against West Ham. Spurs $1.92, making the short trip. The away team, West Ham at $3.30 with tab, and the draw paying $4.25 for that game. Now, these games in progress, Newcastle 1-0 up over Everton, Nottingham Forest 2-0 up over Fulham, Bournemouth and Crystal Palace scoreless, Burnley and Wolves scoreless, and all those games between about the 24 and 40-minute mark as it stands. And more games tomorrow morning as well. Arsenal, Luton, Brentford, Brighton, Manchester City and Aston Villa. Shortly, we're going to play an interview. Loz and I spoke to Michelle Ford recently, who was Australian 800-metre freestyle Olympic champion in 1980 at an interesting time. As far as the Olympic movement was concerned, it was obviously a time when there was a lot of boycotts due to the Cold War, and Ford herself swimming against East Germans that were, let's just say, part of a very liberal sort of testing, or I don't even know if you call it a testing regime, but she swam against drug cheats. It's as simple as that, but still was too good. And she's written a book, Turning the Tide. So we'll speak to Michelle Ford. Well, we'll play that interview with Michelle Ford soon. We got Bulldog in this morning, if you're just tuning in. And we haven't got to the various grenades that Bulldog's set to lob as part of his Bulldog's Bite column in the paper today. But Loz has already had a crack at him. That was after you were warmly received when you first walked in the door this morning and ran into your great mate over there.
Yeah, he's not a good morning person, is he?
But well, I'm not either.
Things he was saying were quite hurtful, to be honest with you. When we all have our feelings, Laurie.
I know, Bulldog, but you know I love you.
Really?
Well, you know that's a sign of affection.
Right, okay.
Some of the things I say to you.
I might repeat and go to a poll then to ask whether what you said is actually deemed to be love.
Well, when you bag a mate, that's a sign of affection.
It really is. It's weird in to Australia, compliment each other.
I know. You don't find that? Well, when blokes bag me, if I know them really well, I just laugh, and I think that's just a sign of
it is
that
the
affection.
Australian way,
yeah.
Isn't it?
But if it's someone that I don't know, yes, I would take offence. I'd be like, "Who are you? What are you carrying on with?" Whenever, but if it's someone I know, mate, I just laugh, and I think it's funny.
Whenever you and I bag Ricky,
yeah,
and I tell Ricky,
yeah,
his first comment is, "I wouldn't have it any other way."
Yeah, mate, 100%. Well, I bag him, he bags me, you bag him, he bags you. So it just all works
and then we
like
all
that.
Jump in the life raft and bag each other.
That's sort of like rugby league, isn't it, in general? You know what I hate? Not hate, I love about rugby league? You and I can be the fiercest of rivals, all right? And we hate one another. Yet, if there's a common enemy, and say it's Mido, you and I will gang up to take Mido out. Once he's gone from the equation, me and you will go back to hating each other. That's how rugby league works. It's an unusual chemistry that the sport has, but that's what happens.
What about as a journo? They'll say, "We hate you, what you wrote. You're a dickhead. I'll never forgive you." A nice story a week later. He's not a bad bloke.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a bad bloke.
Ah. Just the way we
just swings around, off. Doesn't it?
Exactly.
Just gotta hold your ground, Loz. Keep your gloves up.
100%.
And punch on, son.
How much
you survive.
How much do you enjoy Ricky's post-match media conference?
Oh, I told him. I said I get popcorn now. The response wasn't exactly something you'd put on a family radio show. I thought he handled himself quite well after the Sharks. He was seething, but he held it together. He was teetering, wasn't he? He was one question away from just toppling over the edge again.
I like when coaches say, this is what I love. when they go, the journo will ask the question, they go, well, what do you think?
What do you think?
Love that. Oh. I love when they come back with that.
I always go, well, so, I know now, what I'm thinking, but
what about the
you?
First time that ever happened? Were you just shocked and put off and sort of half stumbled?
To say.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't know what to say.
But I would. But now you'd be okay. But I mean, at the start, what is it like?
We might have a story in mind, which is the obvious story, but you need quotes from the coach.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear it from me. They want to hear the coach discussing it. So it's a silly retort from a coach because all the news bulletins, all the radio shows, all the newspapers, they want quotes from the coach, not from a journo. So you have to keep prompting them to get it out of them.
Yeah. I love that one.
What do you think?
Yeah. You can always tell when a coach...
Mick Malthouse special.
Yeah.
You can just tell when the irritation levels are growing, and it depends on the level of question.
Who's the best journo at knowing that the coach is agitated and doesn't care and just goes? Keeps asking the question, knowing that eventually he's going to break the coach and the coach is going to say something silly.
It probably...
Who was or who is?
Well, it probably depends on how close you are to that coach as well, Loz. Maybe you might just ease back a fraction if the coach is a good mate of yours.
Yep.
Or you might get him after the press conference alone.
Yeah. But you must have seen a good journo in the day that just was ruthless.
Well, Chippy was great.
Chippy
for Lingos was always very good. Ray Chesterton was good. Buzz is up there with the very best.
Yeah.
If a coach is getting irritated, I mean, let's cut to the chase. You go for the jugular.
You know,
if you know he's talking about a topic, that's what annoys me about some journos, and I won't bring them up, but I'm not talking about the current crop, maybe more in the past, is you will be on a good story and he's ready to pop. And a journo will come in with, oh, any injuries? And it's like, oh, no. Are you seriously? And, of course, once he's gone, he won't come back.
He won't come back.
You try to drag him back, but the moment's gone.
Yeah.
Some journos will come in with questions written down.
Right.
Any injuries? What did you think of the grass today? Yeah, it's like, you feel like leaping over and throttling them.
Well, Michelle Ford was Australia's youngest swimmer to qualify for the Montreal 1976 Olympic Games. She was 13 years of age and was Australia's only individual gold medalist at the Moscow 1980 Olympics. She was inducted into the Sport Australia Hall of Fame back in 1985, was a founding member of the IOC Athletes Commission and held directorship positions with the Australian Sports Commission, the Australian Sports Foundation and Swimming Australia as well. And she's written a book, Turning the Tide, and gives a glimpse into the challenges faced by athletes striving for excellence amidst, well, great political turmoil and also bureaucratic hurdles as well. Great to have her on, Michelle Ford. Michelle, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Jared. Good, thanks.
13 years of age when you went to Montreal in 1976, Michelle. How did you receive the news? For a young girl at that age, tell us about the feeling in the build-up to that Olympics.
Oh, look, it was just amazing. I'd had a great winning streak at 12, 13. I've got to say that when I was in my younger years, I didn't really touch the wall first. I came seconds, thirds, fourths, you know, like it wasn't... success at the first race I did. But by 12 years of age, I was showing promise and I broke the Commonwealth records and, you know, my times were up there, world standards. And I just knew I was going to get on that team, but there was some trepidation about my age, of course, taking someone so young. But I didn't see it like that. That was, you know, I felt that, you know, I'd done the time. So, I was there and I was there to win gold.
And so what did you take out of 76 as a young girl heading towards 1980 and those games in Moscow? And how much improvement did you have during that period to give you the confidence to compete against, well, the challenges, I guess, in and out of the pool that you were facing against?
Yeah, well, we were struck. Montreal was a real tough time for Australian athletes. Firstly, there was no money in the sport at all, and we were sent to the other side of Australia for a training camp, away from our parents, away from our coaches, away from our friends. I was 13. I had no idea of how to live on my own even. and no one to talk to. And it was very devastating. And that was the same for most of my teammates. But hitting Montreal was a whole different ball game. And we arrived on the pool deck for, of course, our first session. And there we saw the East German girls, or should I say, East Germans. And it was quite a fright because of the size of the girls, the strength, just the even how they managed the team. It was professional, you know, and we were just a scraggly lot of Australian kids, really.
Tell us about the 1980 Olympic Games and the lead up to it. And, you know, you were told to boycott. You received death threats. What was it like in the build up? What was it like competing over there? And in particular, when you first came face to face with the East Germans, what were you thinking to yourself?
Yeah, look, I think the build-up to the 1980 Games was tough on everyone. The Americans called the boycott and asked all Western countries to join. We were just sacrificial lambs, really, in the process. And, you know, the athletes who were training, we had our hearts set on going. And the Australian Olympic Committee, we were fortunate that they decided to go to the Games. You know, a lot of athletes pulled off. I mean, training was just impossible. You know, when you don't know whether it's going to... It was a bit like the COVID, you know. We didn't know whether we were going, we were not, we were going. So you're in and out of the water wondering, you know, what's going to happen. And there was a lot of trouble in the Australian public whether we should go or not. There was opinion polls. We received death threats. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible time. And by the time we got to Moscow, you know, we had to forget all that, but it was hard to forget because we were so far away, yet we still kept getting fan mail that said we were traitors to the country, which is really hard to stand up on the blocks. But the other thing, when we hit Moscow, of course, we were our competitors, and that being the East German girls, and they were strongest. You know, if you look at their, and this is what I've presented in the book, is the side of the story that no one yet has presented, and that is about the East German girls and how much they were fed doping at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And their doping amounts, you know, if we recall Ben Johnson, they were taking three times the amounts of what Ben Johnson was taking. And they were my competitors.
Wow. And yet, in spite of all that, in 1980 in Moscow, you win the 800 metres freestyle gold medal. What are your memories of the race?
It was a strange race because the first two races I had my 200 butterfly where I got third and my 400 freestyle where I got fourth. Both races taught me that these girls were a team. They worked as a team. They sent one girl out first, one girl back. And so with my coach, Bill Swetnam, we decided that we were going to outsmart them. And, you know, I asked Bill how I managed, and he said, no one would have beaten you that day, Michelle, no one. Mm-hmm. But, I was surprised to get out in front of them, and that I kept saying, you know, they're coming back at me, knowing their speed and their endurance through the doping program. When I touched that wall, it was total relief.
It's a special achievement, isn't it? Because you're the only non-Soviet bloc female swimmer to win individual medals in two specialised strokes. So when you touch the wall and to know that you'd beaten those girls and you were clean, you must have been on cloud nine.
Yeah, look, I guess that, and that has all come to me writing this book as well, is the realization of what I actually achieved. And that is, you know, I overcame the doping, the biggest state sponsored doping the world has ever seen. And I showed that you could get up there and win without. And I hope, you know, that's part of my story. You know, I want the parents and the coaches and people who are around athletes to realize that that's not the pathway that you should have take for young kids.
No, and you were one of the, I shouldn't say lucky ones, but you were one of the competitors that won and beat the girls who were doping. But what about some of the other competitors from Australia or maybe around the world? Have you ever spoken to them about how they felt after those Olympics? Because, you know, they would have finished on the podium, possibly won a gold medal, but they were denied the opportunity?
Absolutely. And I wanted to write this book to use my voice as an advocate for all those athletes who were denied those opportunities due to doping and to boycotts. Doping, of course, because the recognition of those girls has never been done through the IOC nor the FINA, which is the international body for swimming. And I think that because of the facts that we know today, and this has only come out in just before 2000, that the girls took their administrators and their coaches to court in Germany. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, the German courts sanctioned the coaches for the doping program. Yet the girls who competed against them have never had any recognition or put to bed that question mark over why, if you cheat, you cheat. We understand there is a lot of empathy for the East German girls and what they went through, but there is a question about fair play, and that's the only question I think that has to be answered.
We're speaking with Michelle Ford, Olympic 800 metres freestyle gold medalist at the Moscow Games in 1980. And Michelle, you became a founding member as well of the IOC Athletes Commission. Tell us about that experience, getting invited onto that commission by the IOC president, Juan Antonio Samaranch, at the time.
Yeah, look, I mean, with all that turmoil and trouble that the athlete went through, the Olympic movement itself, the International Olympic Movement, was on its knees. It didn't know where to turn to survive the hit on the head that they had through that 1980 ordeal. And because they invited 25 athletes from around the world, and I was lucky enough to be one of those, and we said to the IOC, I mean, athletes didn't have a voice. We were treated as political pawns and seen as, you know, unthinking robots was their actual words that they used. We were supposed to be on the field of play, not in the boardrooms, not on the not discussing any issues with them. So when we came out and we were quite strong and bold in our ask for that we said that doping is the most shameful abuse. We still believe that, but also that we need to put the sanctions around the entourage and give a lifetime ban to athletes. Now, that was a bold statement from athletes at that time, but it was enough to move the IOC into getting to the WADA, the World Anti-Doping Drug Authority, and also gender equality. There was no females in the administration of sport. We asked that be changed. And also, of course, that the political interference not be a deterrent for athletes.
Mm. Michelle, I've got to ask, and I do know the answer to this, but what do you make of this new concept that's been floating about in regards to the performance-enhancing games?
Look, I think we have a duty of care to our younger generation, all those athletes who have performed at the highest level should be making sure that there's fair play, and doping is not fair play, and doping is dangerous. Doping is very dangerous. We know through my book, I've brought out what happens to you if you take drugs. The East German girls is that example. We have a real trouble. Their they're dying off at not 40 years of age. They've got problems with their reproductive systems. Their internal system is a mess. Now, if we want that for the younger generation, the enhanced games sort of points to that. Well, it's all good. Go for it. And I just think it's a tragedy for anyone who goes in that and applauds that.
It's fair to say, Michelle, our current swim team, it's a powerhouse once again as we head towards Paris this year with huge expectations. Who do you like watching compete, and how do you think our current team will go as we head towards those games?
Well, it's just too exciting to see the women's team, and I'm just so, the Australian women have always held our flag up high over the years, and especially in swimming. And we've got Kate Campbell coming back, and good luck to her, and Mickey and Emma. She's there, but we've got a lot of younger ones, and Ariane in my event, the 800 freestyle. Mm. If she can win gold, that would just take our history even further into the record books.
Your book, Turning the Tide, and of course, Michelle, it's the sort of book, you don't have to be a sports or a swimming fan. This is very much a story that would have broad appeal.
Yeah, I hope to have reached, the mums and dads out there, and, just a general interest, a human interest story. That happened actually, sadly, in the Cold War when that was playing out. But those events are really back on our table today.
Great stuff, and naturally easily bought online and in bookstores, I'm sure. Turning the Tide is the title. Michelle Ford's story. And Michelle, we really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Laurie, for having me on.
Give us a call, 1353 53 0419-767-272 on the text line. And just on our chat there with Michelle Ford, Adrian at Castle Hill has texted in saying he worked for John Sumegi, who won a silver medal in kayaking at the Moscow Olympics. The Australian public were disgusting in the way they treated Michelle Ford, John, and all the athletes who, after training their hearts out, decided to compete. The athlete who beat John for the gold medal weighed 97 kilos, was literally 1 metre across the shoulders, yet his legs were like toothpicks. I wonder why that was the case. Yeah, interesting times for sure, and Turning the Tide is the book, and would be a very intriguing story to read from Michelle Ford.
Oh, most definitely, Mido. And we were lucky enough to talk to her, but we also spoke to her off-air as well. And just some things that were, occurred during those times was unbelievable. But go out and get the book. Because it'd be a great read, but she was the only athlete, swimmer, to win a gold medal in that era, in that games.
Mm. Aussie swimmer,
So very special performance, Dean. When you think about it, isn't it?
You're awake now.
They're all juiced up.
You're up on your toes. You're out and about now, aren't you? Up and about.
Yeah, that reflection from your shirt has sort of affected me.
Is this every day, Mido? 5:30 grumpy, about 6:45 comes good.
You bring out something special in Laurie.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. It's lovely to watch. It's about an hour and 10 minutes you're normally grumpy, and then you...
I come good.
You come good.
I do, Bulldog, yeah.
It's about a quarter past six, I reckon, for us, Laws.
Yeah, usually. Right, okay. Yeah, first half hour, I'm no good. But then I come into my own. And when I've got a little mate next to me, I like
Clarky
noodling at times.
You know what woke him up? The text line. There's some people bagging me. So he got all excited about that.
I haven't read them yet, but I want
to. You have read them because you pointed them out to me.
Should we read some?
No, let's move on.
Morning, boys. Bulldog, can you tell me which lotto numbers won't win, please?
Thank you, Red Hot Rooster.
Yep, okay. No, I won't read all these, but we'll go for it.
It's great to be here, guys. Oh, it's good. Keep them coming in.
And we'll get to you, Colin, Bulldog's Bite, a little later this morning in your regular segment. The team's out, as we mentioned. I just want to read one text here in regards to the Zach Lomax news. So yesterday, we mentioned it earlier during the headlines. So the Dragons confirming it had reached agreement with Lomax for him to leave at the end of the season, so he's a free agent and can talk to other clubs now about 2025 and beyond. But he could still leave this year if Shane Flanagan's comfortable with a player swap. So Parramatta keeps being sort of the club most linked to Lomax, and they're set to meet today. And Sid points out, so if Lomax doesn't get the fullback spot at Parramatta next year, you know, will he want one out of the contract? Where will King Gutho play, says Sid? But just on where he would play, so I guess it naturally would be next to Pennicini there in the centres. Gutho fullback, obviously Moses, because they've got Morgan Harper, but he's off contract, isn't he, at the moment? And we put Lomax.
Bailey Simonson's there as well. They've got a bit of depth in the centres, but clearly he won't be moving Gutho out of the fullback position, so you'd imagine he'd have to line up in the centres. But look, it's a valid point. If he doesn't play in the position he wants at Parramatta, what next? This is the innuendo that's going to come his way when you want to leave a club because you don't get to play in the position that you want.
Yeah, and that's why I asked the question this morning, Bulldog. Is that the real reason that he wants out? I don't know.
You tell me, Loz. If you were coaching an NRL side and a bloke said to you, who's an elite player, I want to play this position, and if you don't, I want out. How would you approach it?
How would I approach it? I'd sit down and ask him, why does he think he's better than what we've already got there? And I would talk to him about, this is where I best think you're suited to the team. But you know what else I'd probably do? I'd probably give him an opportunity and say, listen, I'll give you an opportunity and you show me why you deserve to be in that position. And if you don't
perform, if you give him that opportunity, aren't you pandering to him?
No, not really. Not if he's, if you think he's going to be a really good player, you're trying to work with him. But all coaches handle it differently. There's not a right or a wrong way. And I think the Dragons have handled this well. I think they've done a good job. They've been strong at the start. They said, mate, you're not going. You're going to be here for the season at least. He's tried to work with him. He's found a position for him that he's playing good football in. And now it gives them an opportunity to free up their money, because if he's going to be a winger, $800,000 is way too much if you're going to pick Zach as a winger, and that puts their salary cap out of whack, out of shape. So if that's where Flano sees him for the Dragons, well, you've got to probably move him on. It's probably in the best interest of the Dragons to move him on. Otherwise, you're paying a winger $800,000, which I don't think a lot of other clubs would be doing. And spend that money in other areas.
As far as the teams are concerned for this weekend, and the Dragons have got the Knights, crucial game for the Knights this on Friday night, but they've changed in the halves again, Adam O'Brien, there at the Knights, with Jackson Hastings coming back in, and this time Tyson Gamble's been dropped. So Hastings and Cogger in the halves there. Dane Gagai and Leo Thompson, they return for what is a crucial match for Newcastle. Considering they've had how they've started the season at home, Friday night v the Dragons. This is a, we don't say must win games this early in the season, but if they'll be in a real hole if they lose this.
Well, this is a game that they're expected to win. I thought they showed some decent signs last week against the Warriors. The Warriors are tough to beat, but Jackson Hastings returning, it just shows you that they're just not sorted in what the right combination to take them forward in the halves is. Kalyn Ponga was outstanding last weekend. Gagai's also was a big loss for them. Brayley comes in to start at hooker. Crossland goes back to the bench. So some of those players that were really good for them at the back end of last year haven't repeated their performance. And I'm not blaming all those guys and saying that's the reason why, because there's other players in that team that aren't performing as well as what they did last year either. But, you know, Phoenix Crossing last year was off the charts. You know, Gamble and Hastings were playing really good football. And obviously, Kalyn had the season that he had. But it is an important game for the Knights. And they have to win this. And you would think, being at home against the Dragons team that have been, you know, up and down, it's a good opportunity for them to win their second game.
How much of a factor is it, Loz, in terms of Adam O'Brien's halves? Yes, they are obviously the team leaders, and yes, they are playmakers. But in terms of his combination and unlocking Kalyn Ponga, is Jackson Hastings the bloke that can unlock Ponga a little more than maybe a Tyson Gamble? Does that come into his thinking when he's picking his halves?
Yeah, good question. But having said that, like last week, Ponga was good without Hastings here. No, so I think Ponga is good enough to bring the best out in himself rather than wanting others to unlock him. I'm unsure of what their best halves combination is. I thought that was the right way to go to start the season, Gamble and Hastings, given what they did last year, even though Cogger was coming from Penrith. But I think that he's just not happy with how the team is playing at the moment, obviously wanting to get the best out in them, trying to find the right combination. And what we do know at Newcastle, we've got a small sample of what they were able to do last year where they can win back-to-back games. And if you do that in this comp, if you can win four or five in a row, you'll shoot up the ladder pretty quickly. Now, they've got to improve to do that, but they're certainly capable of doing it. So I wouldn't be writing them off just yet.
I am surprised, though, that we are four games in going into round five and the Knights have already had three different combinations in their halves. So clearly Adam O'Brien's not happy. We can see that every Tuesday because he keeps changing it. But you would have thought perhaps now, after a long off-season, that he'd be settled on his halves. But to change it three times in four games...
Well, the thing that's concerning, Bulldog, is that last year that was the combination that worked for them. So you'd think they'd be better this year. And it hasn't been better. And you've chopped and changed and you're still trying to find what is going to work for you. So, look, you can dissect it any way you want, but I reckon they've shown glimpses in patches, Newcastle. But they've got to be able to do it for a longer period than what they have been. And obviously they rely on Kalyn a lot, but again, their forwards and the direction, the kicking game from the halves needs to be a lot better. And they get a great opportunity against the Dragons this weekend.
The market with Tab has the Knights $1.42, the Dragons are $2.90, and the line is 7.5 as it stands. Dragons the plus. Another intriguing match for mine, 5:30 Fox League Saturday at Four Pines. Manly up against Penrith, with Manly coming off laying a bit of an egg there against the Dragons last week. They're $2.35 outsiders against the three-time defending premiers, who are $1.60 or 3.5-point favourites at the line. And James Fisher-Harris returns for the Panthers as well. Daly Cherry-Evans set to go past Cliff Lyons, the great Cliff Lyons, and play his 310th game for the club. That is a club games record looming for DCE. But, gee, they were impressive. We mentioned them briefly yesterday, lost the Panthers. And you mentioned it last week with Cleary going down. Brad Schneider, how capable was he there against the Roosters last week?
I think he's a really good player, Brad Schneider. And I've always was impressed when he played with the Raiders every time he filled in. So there's no doubt that they picked up a good one there to replace Nathan when he's missing throughout the season, whether he picks up an injury or around State of Origin time. But Fisher-Harris returning is a big one for the Panthers. He and Moses Leota have formed a strong combination. I give Manly a chance, even though I think Penrith are the side to beat. I give Manly a chance at Brookvale because I think that that's where they'll play their best footy. And they're always hard to beat there, historically. And they would have been disappointed with their last two performances, in particular last week against the Dragons. And Tom, I don't think I've seen him play a worse game as far as errors are concerned. So I think they can bounce back in this game, but it'll be tight.
I don't think we should ever underplay what Daly Cherry has achieved. The most games ever for Manly, a club dating back to 1947, Menzies and
some legends,
and your Fultons. He goes past Cliff Lyons, Jeff Toovey's, Alan Thompson's, Graham Eady. The list goes on. It is such a famous Sydney club. And here's this bloke who's going to become the number one in terms of most appearances.
It's a great story.
Yeah, and Cherry Evans, Loz, as far as I can see, week on week, he's not getting slower as he gets older. He actually seems to be getting better with age. Mm. I don't think at 35 his form is any less now than what it was 10 years ago.
No, he's been a great pickup for the Eagles. And a couple of years ago, he was off to the Titans, wasn't he?
Well, I was just thinking, sliding doors moment, and we look at where the Titans are now. Where would they be, both these clubs, had Cherry Evans gone to the Titans? And I know they haven't won a premiership since that occurred, Manly. But you wonder where the Titans would be now and who Manly would have there now.
Yeah. Well, it's good if you've got a good halfback, isn't it? Like, you just know that you can't win a comp without them. And you've got to have a good one. And Cherry Evans has proven himself to be a great one. And what he's been able to achieve throughout his career has been very special. And to be the most capped player to play for Manly is a massive achievement when you, Bulldog quite rightly pointed out that, you know, there's been some massive names that have played for that club. But this will get we'll get a better indication of Manly, how they're travelling on Sunday when they take a sad day when they take on the Panthers, because the Panthers were so impressive last weekend doing it without those players. And they're going to be hard to beat in any game, and no matter what team they throw out there on the paddock. But I looked at Manly, some of their a period of their game last week against the Dragons, but I'd never seen Tom play like that, like make as many mistakes as he did last week.
So it was that bad, it became comical. And I say that respectfully, it became comical.
Because we don't see it.
We just don't see it. I think Anthony Seibold, Loz, would have said, you know what, let's just wipe that one. Let's not go back.
No.
It's gone. It's in the bin. We'll never play that bad again. We haven't played that bad before. It's done. It's dusted. It wasn't our day, and let's move on.
No, because their opening 2 weeks, they were great. I thought their performance against Parramatta to start that game was tremendous. I hadn't seen Manly play like that for a long time, the way they were moving the ball and really troubling Parramatta. But then they sort of allowed Parra back into the game, and they got the victory. But then last week, I just thought they'd be too good for the Dragons. Just shows you in the comp, though, if you... Well, I don't know whether they underestimated their opponent, but if you turn up and you make errors against any opposition and the other opposition's holding the ball and they're up for the challenge, then you're going to be in for a tough afternoon.
Deliciously flaky pastry on top of bottom, which is rolled extra thin, filling a 100% lean Aussie beef. I'm talking about Garlo's pies, the only pies you should be putting on your plate, and Garlo's pies are simply bursting with flavour. There's heaps of flavours to choose from. Here's a thought. Take an odd off from cooking and grab a Garlo's family pie for the whole crew. They're available in all Coles and Woolworths stores. Remember that we are located in the chilled meals section. If you can't find us, just ask for Garlo's pies by name. Garlo's pies, they're thin on pastry. They're big on meat. And plenty of commentary on the text line on the Zach Lomax situation. Morning, boys. Fleno sat Lomax down at the start of the year, told him his stats don't even rank in the top 20 centres in the NRL. He's always been the next big thing, but rarely comes up with much in the centres. As a Dragons fan, I'm okay with letting him go. Can't keep the same players and expect different result year after year, says Chapo. Fair dinkum, boys. Lomax on 800K. If he is, his manager should have signed a 10-year extension because he ain't worth half that. Seriously, what has he done? Beat ordinary in an ordinary team. Nelly from Noosa. Some harsh comments there on Zach Lomax. Adam Pengilly joining us. How are you, mate?
G'day, mate. G'day, boys. These are huffy old Dragons fans, aren't they? They don't mind sticking the boot in when they need to.
Yeah, and I've got to say, we've all got Dragons fans in our lives. On my group chat last night, the Dragons fans had similar sentiments to what was on the text line just there. So where do you think he ends up? Is it inevitable it's Para?
Oh, I think it's a well advanced, put it that way, Mido. He'll be meeting with Brad Arthur, I think, today. And there's no way that Zach or his management would have allowed the Dragons to end the final 2 years of his deal without having something else lined up and pretty much ready to go. So I dare say that's fairly well advanced. I'm not sure if there'll be another team that'll be sort of a late entrant into the Zach Lomax sweepstakes. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I you know what, Mid? I've always been a bit of a defender of Zach Lomax. I know a lot of people won't agree with me, but he can be erratic and a little bit inconsistent. But he's got a skill set that a lot of those Dragons players just don't have, essentially. He can win games for them. His aerial ability, his goal kicking, he just does stuff that other players in that squad can't do. And I know you've got to cop the good with the bad sometimes, and there's a little bit of inconsistency that comes with him. I'm not against releasing him, because, quite frankly, the reason why he's probably on such, I suppose, shaky ground the Dragons is his price tag. That's all it boils down to. Like, it's a lot of money to be paying a guy who plays essentially on the wing. But having said that, I think they will miss him when he does go, because he can win them games.
Let's talk some racing then. And what a ripping Doncaster we've got on Saturday.
Yeah.
Gee, great race. But The barrier draw, and well, our favourite, another Will's drawn wide, but that hasn't affected as far as the betting is concerned. It's still been, well, really solid at $3.50 with Tab.
Yeah, I can understand why, Mido, just looking at this forecast. I don't know if you had a look at it last night. I had a quick look again last night. It looks horrific for Thursday and Friday, in particular Friday. So if the Bureau is right, and we know they can get it wrong a fair bit, but if they're right, we've been working on a very heavy track for Saturday. And when you look at the heavy track at Randwick, rail's going to be in the true on the weekend. You don't want to be anywhere near the fence. So I know another wheel's drawn, barrier 21. You probably initial thoughts are, well, that's going to make it tough for him, but by the time we get to the Doncaster on Saturday, if this track's really chopped up, you might want to be 10, 12, 14 horses off the fence and coming down the middle to the outside part of the track. So it might not be such a bad barrier draw if things play out that way. Yeah, good race, isn't it, Mido? So many different form lines merging to this. Obviously, a lot of horses down the limit weight. So, yeah, can't wait for on the weekend. Just praying for some sort of miracle and we don't get a bog track like the forecast suggests we will.
Well, let's hope not, and fingers crossed it's not raining on the Saturday and we don't get as much rain as we're expecting on the Friday. But Imperatrice, she drew well in the TJ Smith Stakes, and, geez, this is going to be another good race on Saturday.
Yeah, fantastic race, Loz. I'm trying to get my head around I Wish I Win's preparation. We've seen Peter Moody do this in the past. I think he was first up in the Memphis Stakes, wasn't he, at 1,400 metres last preparation. And everyone was sort of saying, oh, wow, this is a really sort of, an uncommon preparation heading towards a race like the Everest. Again, he's going to be first up in the TJ Smith Stakes. It's very, very rare to see horses sort of running in the TJ Smith Stakes fresh. But obviously, Peter Moody's got a plan. He'll obviously go head up to Queensland after this. At this stage, the market says it's going to be dominated by those two horses. I Wish I Win and Imperatrice. And I'm still convinced, guys, that I don't think Imperatrice has been anywhere near her best so far this preparation, albeit she's won a couple of Group 1 races. I think the X factor in this race clearly is Sunshine in Paris. I think this mare's got an absolute bucket load of ability. We saw her run so well first up in the Galaxy. She just might be the horse that comes from a little bit left field, doesn't quite have the runs on the board as some of these other horses, but I'm respecting her big time in this TJ on the weekend.
Could not agree more. And the size, can't wait to see. Well, I think it's the first five across the line in the slipper backing up in the size.
It is, Mido, and it's so rare that we see something like this. Usually when the slipper comes around, most of those horses fall by the wayside. There's only probably a few left that run from the slipper that head towards the size. When you get sort of a fresh batch or pool of horses who are getting ready for the 1,400 metres or the mile of the Champagne, but it's great to see the first five from the slipper across the line backing up in the size. I think Storm Boy will be a little bit better suited heading towards this race at 1,400 metres. We know he was slow into stride in the slipper, and that pretty much cost him any chance of winning this race. Maybe a smaller field and an outside gate is probably going to help him a little bit better and try and get him to settle on speed. Lady Camelot will obviously be hard to beat, and then you've got the horses like Manal and Coleman and Traffic Warden coming out of the slipper too. So, yeah, fascinating race. I'm looking forward to the size, and in particular the Champagne. I think the two-year-old's still got a fair bit left in the tank for the rest of this autumn carnival.
Yeah, good point on the text line. If 70 mil plus of rain hits Randwick Friday, I'm tipping barriers won't matter. You'll need a 2,000-metre plus horse to win this Doncaster. No name to that one. But yeah, we just in the lap of the gods. We see how it plays out, but we'll have the rest of those fields for day one of the championships, the country championships final as well. Adam, what about Bandy's Boy on the weekend? Yeah. Incredible.
Incredible. He's got to run up to that on Saturday. You know, he should be winning, shouldn't he, the country championships. But yeah, Danny Williams done a great job with that horse, and I'm sure he probably thought it was only a tickover run last week, but he ended up winning a stakes race and getting ready for the country championships. So yeah, I can understand why he's going to dominate a lot of punters' thoughts in the betting market for the country championships.
Bring it on. Thanks, mate. Have a good day.
See you, boys.